So we're here at the Rabbi's Table, a place of dialogue, not debate, with a really special guest, Jonathan Tobin. Jonathan, thank you so much for being here.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
You are a blessing. You are a blessing to the world. You're a blessing to us for being here. And as always in this segment, we are joined by Angela Vanderplume, who is also a wise and amazing woman. And is terrific in so many ways, writes in so many important pieces and articles, and is a thinker and a true Zionist as well. So, Angela, meet Jonathan. Jonathan, meet Angela. And let's have a little bit of dialogue with two people who are really very, very well-versed, especially in Zionism and in Israel. Let's start it off with this. If you could guide Israel, each of you, or together come up with the answer, if you could guide Israel with one piece of advice, what would that piece be? What would the two of you say, individually or collectively, if you could wave a magic wand, what would be the advice that you give to Israel?
Well, let Angela go first. I've been talking a lot.
Sure. I think with the world trajectory and everything that's happening right now, yes, we must remember that Israel has allies, and it has a lot of allies. But I think at the same time, it also has to prepare for a hypothetical situation in a day where it doesn't have those allies. And it's necessary for Israel to be on its own, to prepare for that. Not saying it's going to happen, but to always just prepare in case it does.
Jonathan?
That's wise advice. I think Israel does need to prepare for a scenario, especially, you know, it's a real possibility of, that an American administration will be hostile to it. What we thought of as a you know, really hostile Obama and at times Biden administration towards Israel, the next Democratic president is likely to be very hostile to Israel. And there's a possibility of a Republican president who is by no means a good friend of Israel, as we mentioned, with the possibility of Vance. And I agree, it must move to be more of a defense manufacturer, to be less dependent on American arms. Prepare for a world where it will be more isolated. And yet it should, I would sort of still counter to that in that Israel is still too small, you know, and has its enemies are too great for it to allow itself to be completely isolated. So it must always seek to find friends, to, not operate as if it's on an island, because, you know, that is not the nature of its predicament. It must choose its fights carefully. And sometimes that will mean making difficult decisions, as has happened in the past. I think the piece of wisdom I would like Israelis to take most to heart is that as much as it is tempting to engage in sort of internecine warfare and political divisions, and obviously, you know, it's a democracy and it's a Jewish democracy, so you know, they're going to be at each other's throats, you know, two Jews, three political parties, through two Jews, three opinions, maybe five or six Israeli political parties. But they can't lose sight of the fact that they have to work together. They can't succumb to the temptation of, well, I hate Netanyahu, I hate the religious, or I hate the secular, whoever, like the divisions. And we're going to see a lot of it in the coming months with the new election. And there's going to be a lot of very bitter backbiting. That's the nature of Israeli politics. But they must keep in mind that they must be as unified as possible. As difficult as that is, as divisive as the issues about, you know, military service with Haredim, the threat from Hamas, all sorts of, you know, the question of judicial reform, which is an important issue. They must not let those divisions overwhelm their sense of national unity and ability to fight against their enemies, because their enemies are looking at those divisions and hoping that will mean the end of Israel.
So we need to, Israel, your advice is for both of you, Israel should prepare. Israel should get involved in its own manufacture of defensive weapons. It should develop other alliances, maybe with India or other places like that. It should realize that it's not isolated, but kind of isolated. What, on a tachlis, on a practical level, just one thing, what do you want Israel to do right now that would change the trajectory? What one little thing, besides not fight with each other, which we know is the Messiah come, then they won't fight with each other. Until then, they're going to keep happening. One little thing that, you know, you pegged Oslo and different things as a movement that changed the trajectory. What's the moment that you want to create right now to change the trajectory so we are living with a safe Israel and safer American Jewry as well? Just one change. What would you do, Jonathan?
I would urge the Israeli government to be ready to deal decisively with its enemies on its borders, whether it's Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah in Lebanon. There is within the Israeli military, even as well as in part of the political class, you know, there's always the tendency to kick the can down the road, to try to tolerate. I mean, much of the disaster of October 7th was based on the conceptia, as they say in Israel, that just mowing the grass with Hamas in Gaza will keep them down and keep Israel safe. They must understand that these are enemies who must be defeated. They can't be tolerated. They can't be lived with. And that's easier said than done, because America plays a part in this. And as much as I think Israel has to be prepared to be at on its own at times, there's no replacing the alliance with the United States. There's no substitute for it. There isn't, as much as it can reach out to other countries, no other country is going to do for Israel what America can and what America might do for it. And it's too many other enemies. So it has to face up to the fact that Hamas and Hezbollah cannot be tolerated. And to do that requires a mindset, and really in some ways a change in thinking within the defense and intelligence establishment that made terrible mistakes leading up to October 7th. Much of the debate about October 7th is about finger pointing. Was it Netanyahu? Was it, the intelligence? The trouble was that there was a consensus that stretched across Israeli politics, Netanyahu's opponents as well as Netanyahu throughout the defense establishment, that believed that they could live with Hamas, they could live with Hezbollah. They can't be lived with.
So and that's
they have
not
to
just
work
defeat.
Towards their defeat, not towards tolerating.
Jonathan, you're not just discussing their defeat, you're discussing, let's be honest, their destruction.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, because let's be honest about it. We're not talking defeat is they surrender, you have peace. You're saying they cannot be done. They must be destroyed. All of the
Hamas must be destroyed. Okay.
I've made that argument that they are the spiritual descendants of Amalek, so you're not going to get an argument from me on that concept. Angela, you agree with the great Jonathan?
I do. I agree. But I would also like to add a little bit of a religious perspective, and I think that I would always like to remind them to remember about Ahavat Israel, your love of your fellow Jews, to remember to believe in Hashem himself, and to remember just your Judaism in general, that your Jews were proud Jews, we're all one. And yes, there's politics and we have enemies and we have all of this going around, but we can never lose track of that, because when we do, bad things happen.
That's very well said.
Absolutely. You know where I stand on all that, both of you, and especially you, Angela. Our defense is God. It is not the Iron Dome. The Iron Dome is merely the manifestation of God's love for us. It's a hard decision, you both are saying. Not to get independence, but to be willing to destroy an enemy. And that's a hard place for all of us to go. I've done a lot of crying since October 7th. Do you think that American Jews, just yes or no, can recover Jonathan, and get behind both Israel as a nation and Judaism as a religion if we do go and destroy the enemy, which I agree with you needs to be done. You don't
negotiate. Some will, some won't. Listen, we have a growing, the fastest growing segment demographically of Jews in this country are what the demographers call Jews of no religion. Yep. There is a vast assimilated population that has been drenched in, you know, these woke doctrines. And, you know, we're going to lose a lot of them. We are losing them. But I think the core Jewish community will stand with Israel, and we have to work towards strengthening it, that and enlarging it as much as possible.
Amen.
We shouldn't be deceived into thinking that people who no longer have any sense of Jewish peoplehood, not merely being Jewishly illiterate, as so many American Jews have been over the course, you know, of the last decades, but who really have no sense of being part of the Jewish people, we're not going to get them back. These anti-Zionist Jews, these Jews who are, you know, sort of joining with our enemies,
okay,
we, you know, they're a lost cause. But
within the community,
you know, we can still save them.
I have challenges believing anyone's a lost cause. I believe in the Jewish neshama. So I'm not willing to give up.
I welcome you to commune with Peter Beinart and many people like them. If you can save him, you know.
I'm working on it. That's what we're doing the show for. Jonathan,
having spent some time with him, I've got news for you.
Because of time, I have one more question for you. And I ask this of everyone who comes on here, Jonathan. One word or phrase that defines your neshama, one word that defines the soul of Jonathan Tobin, one word or one phrase. One word, ideally.
Something I learned from my mother, you know, who was who wouldn't have articulated it this way, wouldn't have intellectualized it, but a belief in the Jewish people. That is for whom I fight. That is, you know, my purpose. You know, as a journalist, you know, I'm in the fight for the Jewish people. I believe in Jewish peoplehood, and I will keep fighting for that as long as I have breath in my body.
That is a beautiful tribute to your mother and tribute to you, because we are to be a light on the nation, and your commitment to being a light to the Jewish people, to the world. And having faith and committed to that is kol hakavod.
Thank you.
The honor belongs to you.
And Frieda Drach Tobin, let's mention her. Yeah.
And a blessed memory?
A blessed memory.
May she be blessed, and she obviously has blessed us with how she has raised you. Angela, thank you so much for joining us as always. Jonathan, I can't say thank you enough for sharing your wisdom, your courage, and your commitment to humanity, to the Jewish people, to the world, to Israel, and to your mother, and to life. Thank you for being here. Chazak u'baruch. May you be strong. May you be blessed. May we go from strength to strength, especially in these challenging times that are going on. And we'll be right back with another little bit of the Rabbi's Table.
What if your next getaway felt like an escape to paradise? Welcome to Atlantis, where luxury meets excitement, right in the heart of Northern Nevada. Step onto the casino floor and feel the energy of hundreds of slots, table games, and nonstop action. Hungry? Atlantis is home to award-winning dining, from fresh sushi and steakhouse classics to indulgent buffets and handcrafted cocktails. Need to unwind? Float into the relaxation of the spa. Soak in the indoor or outdoor pools, or simply take in the breathtaking Sierra views from your beautifully appointed room. And with world-class entertainment, shopping, and easy access to Lake Tahoe Adventure, Atlantis is more than a resort. It's the experience you've been waiting for. For reservations, call 775-825-4700. That's 775-825-4700. Or visit atlantiscasino.com, atlantiscasino.com.